Hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I'm Jeff Gammon. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I feel like I'd be completely remiss if I didn't start off by saying, Happy Halloween, everyone. It's October 31st. It's Halloween. So I can't wait to go trick-or-treating with all of you. And then we can compare our treats and trade, and it's going to be great. Everyone else will make out really well if they're going with me. Because of my dairy allergy, I'm just going to be giving away basically everything.
Yeah, I'd like to trick-or-treat with you, Jeff. That would have been great. Whoa, look at all that.
I thought I would get some. I would get some candy for you here.
Oh, thank you. Om nom nom.
I have so much.
It's proper candy. It's none of that American stuff, but the chocolate tastes like sick.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I got like Mars bars, Snickers. I got like some Milka. I got like some.
Yeah, oh, Milka's the good stuff.
I got more Twix. You can have what?
Yeah. So you've got all the good stuff there. No, none of this. None of this American filth. The taste of sick.
No, like candy corn.
Candy corn is bad.
That's awful. I don't know how you can even like.
But someone thought it was a good idea.
I know.
And now I'm not a big candy person anyhow, so I am not the right person to pass judgment. But I do question, how did candy corn make it through the test period? And
good
it's
question.
Been available on the market for so long, it must actually sell well.
What for the English person is candy corn when it's at home? I don't know that one. I mean, so, I know many American disgusting.
Wasn't
American
it originally
things, but that's one I don't...
chicken feed or something called like that? I think so.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So what is it? Is it,
it
is
looks,
it corn that's coated
it look,
in
no,
sweet
it
stuff,
look,
or is it?
It's just sugar, but that's made with food coloring, made look like corn.
Kind yeah, so it's like a yellow tip, a white center, a white mid area, and an orange bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be the other way around. It doesn't matter.
Something like that. It's all
right, so it looks like a kernel of corn, but it's just basically made of solid sugar.
Yes.
And some food coloring. And some food colorings and
pretty
a bit
much.
Of and obviously some buying.
And it's awful.
And, yeah, it's awful.
Yeah.
I have tried candy corn.
Me too.
And the only thing that in the candies that I have tried that to me is even worse, they're called circus peanuts, and it's this candy. It's like, it's sort of like a marshmallow, but if a marshmallow hated you, and they're they're shaped sort of like a peanut in the shell, but they're like 2 or 3 inches long. And they're orange color.
Those are terrible.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, there's also
those are like,
chocolate
they're
coins
like Peeps,
that are awful.
But worse.
Oh, Peeps is also awful. Yeah.
Oh, chocolate coins are awful because even the ones we have here,
coins,
they're the lowest quality chocolate. I mean, even would even make Hershey's blush at the quality of chocolate in a chocolate coin. It's still fun to eat though, but it is that kind of low quality chocolate. I mean, the American. Well, I always kind of like things like Mike and Ike's and Dad. And what's the other one I've tried? It's all the ones that come in those boxes.
The movie theater candies,
hot tamales.
Yeah, there's always things that come in little boxes.
Duds.
I tend to end up.
I'll take.
I tend
I'll
to
take
come in the States. I buy them in CVS. They come in. They always
milk
come in.
Duds.
Milk duds. Milk duds. That's the
milk duds
yeah.
are the best. Milk duds.
Yeah, yeah,
are
yeah.
The top.
My wife loves. I can't remember if it's milk duds or what. There's one I have to bring for her when I'm ever in the States. There's some. Yeah, there's some licorice scented ones as well. Those are the ones that I know my wife's addicted
Tootsie
to.
Rolls, yeah.
So yeah, I have to bring those home when I come back from anywhere American.
I'll make you a trade. I'll send you milk duds if you send me Thornton's chocolate licorice. I think it is.
Thornton's. I don't know Gordon's brand.
Thornton.
Thornton. Oh, that's easy. I can get Thornton's. I can get Thornton's for you.
Oh my god.
I can completely
eat a bag
get
of those
care,
in about 10 minutes.
Awful.
I can completely get Thornton. Anything licorice, I can completely get you proper licorice. And then we have the fun
proper
that we're
licorice. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm with you on proper licorice.
Yeah. Which is
but,
hard
but
to
you
find,
haven't lived until you've had a Terry's orange ball.
They're fantastic. Terry's chocolate orange is a Christmas that we always have as part of a Christmas stocking here. One of the items that has to be included is a chocolate orange.
I've never had
it's that. Just the Terry's rules. The rules.
Orange.
Oh, Cherry's chocolate things. Orange. Cherry's chocolate orange, Jeff. It's foil wrapped and it's like shaped exactly the same as an orange. It's mm-hmm. segmented. The chocolate
yes.
is made by
in fact,
and even better for me here right now, it's made by a company called Terry's. Terry's mm-hmm. was founded in York, the city I live in.
You can buy them for $5.
Really?
Basically everywhere.
Good.
I had a driver one time when I was visiting, and I had a driver that took me from Heathrow to Cambridge. And he was an old guy, really interesting, and we were talking about stuff. And I hadn't been, it was like only my second trip to England at the time. And he said, have you ever had a Terry's orange chocolate ball? And I'm like, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. And we're driving down the road, and he pulls over to the next little shop, and he goes, well, just wait here. We got to stop. Runs into the store, he comes out, and he's got this box with this orange chocolate ball.
So it's exactly as it's described.
Yeah. So it's good chocolate with orange with orange flavoring in it. I'm not sure if it's proper orange flavoring or whether it's E5864138B, whatever. Yeah, but it tastes good, and it's been a staple of the Terry's family are from the city I live in. There's a whole house you can visit that's now owned by the National Trust. You can go and see, and it's fantastic sort of thing. A bit of particularly my particular part of the northeast of England is we are the heart of the chocolate industry here. There were the two mates, so Roundtree's / Nestle, so Kit Kats, Twixes, mm-hmm. all those things, they all started here. And then on the other side, we've got Terry's, who made the chocolate orange and all the other kind of, and all those products. They were very much started here. I mean, the factory now is a load of posh flats. The original Terry's factory with its lovely clock has now been turned in. It's called the Cocoa Works, and it's now because all the manufacturing's gone elsewhere now, obviously. But on the other side of town, where Nestle is as they are now, there's still a full factory making chocolate bars and everything. It's fantastic. And just down the road, Haribo's made.
So you basically live in Willy Wonka town.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's where Willy Wonka grew up, right?
Indeed, and the other place to go to see Willy Wonka and all of his magic is to go to Cadbury's World down to Birmingham, in an area called Bournville. It's a town. It's a fantastic village built by the chocolate company. They built Bournville.
Oh, Cadbury. That's the company Bournville. That does the eggs with the goober juice inside. Right?
Yes, exactly mm-hmm. that. Yes. So they built the village of Bournville, which is the name of one of their chocolates. To go with the factory for the factory workers, because the guys who built the factory and owned it were Quakers. The same in my city, we've got a village called New Earswick, which was built by the Roundtree family, who still now do lots of good housing project stuff and helping with sort of people trying to help people on lower incomes get a house and be able to live nice in a good way. So it's a fantastic mm-hmm. thing. Both families were Quakers. There's a really unassuming little place which is a Pizza Hut from now. But above it was originally one of the early Roundtree shops. And all of the Quaker families that are running things like Bournville, again, the Cadburys, the people who ran Port Sunlight, which was where Procter & Gamble started, and all of the soap manufacturing over in Liverpool, there's another garden village there of the same kind of idea. They all got together and kind of worked out how best to run factories and to make it fair for the people who work for them. That was back in turn of the century, just about, I think.
So not American.
But it was all about, well, if my workers are happy, they'll work harder for me. I'm going to give them. So each of these towns, when they were built, they have a theatre, a school, nice house to live in. You come to work and do your work and you go home. But they're Quakers, so there's no pub. They're always dry. All the three I've been to have always been dry. The three I've been to around the world, around the UK, have all been dry. New Earswick's dry, you have to kind of go around the corner into the next kind of suburb along to get to a pub. I didn't see one when I was in Bourneville or when I was in, again, equally up in Port Sunlight in Liverpool. But fantastic, just fantastic little bit of history I like.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us for the British Candy Network.
The British Candy Network, my name's Ian.
And we should probably at some point figure out who all is here. So let's start with our Patrice Lantern. Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. I had a good day. I did register the other day for, like, there's a kind of a network of people here in Vienna, the Vienna Family Network. And they're doing like a trick or treating for the people, because it's not a big thing here that people do. So you can't just go randomly down the street and hope that you can trick or treat somewhere. But you could register for it and say, hey, I'm giving out candy if you want to step by. So I did that and I gave out. That's why I have this whole big bowl of candies, because I had probably too much, but you never know how many people show up, how many kids show up. There were a bunch. So there was one was a really big group, like four parents and I think like 10 kids or something. So it was super cute, a lot of fun, enjoyed doing it. They were scared a little bit, so it was all good. I had decorated my door and like the entrance and so on. So yeah, if you want to see how that looked like, it's on my Instagram.
Awesome. Well, what would your Instagram name be so people can go find it?
Oh, that's a really good question. Isn't that on my website even? But I can tell you here by just going back. It's Patrice Zoe B. So that was
all right.
That was that. I mean, if you follow me on Instagram, I think it's also on my website. So should be easy. So that as I said, it was a lot of fun. I was ready for it. I dressed up as a pumpkin, did even some face painting. I don't know if you can see it. Smudged a little bit because I
can see your pumpkin and your little bats.
Yeah, so that's it. I love Halloween. So my whole house is Halloween themed and decorated, the windows and everything. So yeah, it's been a fun day. Beautiful weather as well.
Awesome.
So what else can you ask for?
Right. Yeah, you can ask for the good candy. That's what you can ask for.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. Speaking of such, Tom, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Jeff. It's free trick-or-treat time here in California. Still got 6 or 7 hours, and I have to carve this pumpkin
sometime in the next
couple hours, which is kind of dangerous. My wife is up doing a volunteer event, so I have to carve the pumpkin. So
no pressure.
About as artistic as a bulldog. So,
and given your kitchen skills, that might really be a challenge for you.
Right, I'll probably have a really bad pumpkin and cut off the tip of one of my fingers. I'm sure that.
Do you have any power tools?
Yeah, I do.
I can only go back.
I think your problem has just been solved.
Yeah, I mean, do. You know the old
big bit on the drill and
you got some friends in town that could help you. I think they're called the Mythbusters, and I mean, what they probably will recommend is, when in doubt, C4.
Yes,
C4. Yeah, I think a little C4 so that the pumpkins blow up as the kids are walking up or walk. That would be a good idea.
So if you heard it
Teresa
here first,
comes home and says, "Did you carve the pumpkin?" Yes, I did.
Yes, I did. Check out the slow mo footage.
Yeah, it's like, what pumpkin? Doesn't exist anymore. It's like that cement truck. Just doesn't exist anymore.
Oh right, I remember that
episode. Cement truck that was just
with the dried cement inside. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that was awesome. Yep. Well, hey, we have our own Willy Wonka, who treats his Oompa Loompas far better than the actual Willy Wonka did. Ian, how are you?
I'm great, mate. I'm really good. Yeah, been a good week this week. Just been here. I've taught a class, done some research for a couple of new videos I'm creating, the usual stuff. And today I've had the excitement of finally all the the yes, you can book your tickets to go to America things have come through now. So I should be going to, I should be Viva Las Vegas when it comes in early January.
Oh, nice. Oh, January is usually a good time to be in Vegas. Yeah. I mean, except that you have to deal with CES if you're there early in the month.
Yeah.
But temperature-wise.
Temperatures. Yeah, it says 50, sort of 58, 60 sort of temperature, 60s.
It can actually be pretty cold, especially as soon as the sun goes down. That's, it gets awfully cold.
I can cope with that. I just don't want to be frying. I'm very happy for it to be chilly. I'll have come from the UK, which could be any temperature, because at the moment we're in the meh kind of weather zone where it's neither hot
that really
nor cold.
Doesn't narrow it down for the UK.
I know, but it's neither hot nor cold. It's kind of vaguely wet sometimes and then vaguely not wet some other times, but we've had the old day of sort of nice but clear blue skies and autumnal sun, but the temperature's not quite right for the time of year. We've had years before where, thank you global warming, that occasionally going even through the winter, it doesn't really change any. It's still, even when we come out the other side and heading into March and April and what should be spring, it will still be this kind of temperature. We're not sure yet what we're going to get. A few of the local papers will always doomsay that we're going to get 10-foot snow drifts and the world is going to disappear in some random storm. But in the end, well, who knows? But well, yeah, so I'm looking forward to a trip.
We can live
to,
in hope, right?
We can live in hope, but I've got a nice little trip to Lost Wages. I'm going to come a little early, I think, to spend a little bit of time looking around. We're going to do either there's a group of us that'll get there a little bit early, so we're either going to grab a car and drive out to Grand Canyon, or we're going to jump in book one of those buses up to go around, go along and have a look. Nice. You might as well see that while you're there.
Right. Yeah. In Vegas, well, actually just on the west side, but it's still in Vegas. The Neon Museum is really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I'll suggest, I've got 2 days where I know I'm not doing anything that's specifically booked. So it could well be a thing I might suggest if the other guys fancy. If not, I might pop off. That sounds fun. It's all the neon signs that are in a place where you can see them then.
Most of them are from the old strip. So okay. Part of the museum is indoors. And then the biggest part of the museum, really, it's outdoors. Mm. And it's almost like walking through a junkyard that's all neon signs. Of course there's plaques explaining what it is you're looking at, and a lot of the signs still work, at least partially. So it's fun to go in the evening, because then you get to see the signs lit up.
Oh, That sounds good. I might look into that one. That'd be something to do. That's not the, because to be honest, gambling, meh. I've never been to
It's a long drive to the Grand Canyon, but the Grand Canyon is amazing. I mean,
yeah, it's talking about 14-hour trip total for the, terms of what they were saying for the.
I think it's about 4 or 5 hours each way from Vegas. It's quite a ride.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to let someone else do the work.
Yeah.
A mate of mine did say, well, you probably could hire a car and do it cheaper. So who knows which way we'll go with it. It'll do a stint of driving, I suppose, on one very long road that just goes like that forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty boring. Yeah,
it's the most boring.
The fear of that is we're all jet lagged, having just flown in, that one of us will fall asleep at the wheel. We're taking in turns to poke each other with sticks to keep ourselves awake as we get along.
That's what other pilots at the wheel. Are for.
Right. So, all right. Bear with my poor transition. Speaking of falling asleep at the wheel, Patrice, tell us about your story. Your story, sleep at the wheel, not you.
I thought we should move us along. So my story is kind of hilarious. Google has just been fined a amount of money that is bigger than all the money that exists in the world right now. By whom, you ask? Well, the answer is Russia.
So, it is.
2 unidecillion rubles.
Yes. So
that's like all the monopoly money in all the world.
Yes, it's put together in a big bank. Literally completely ridiculous. So I think, as far as I remember, it's a like a privacy fine or something. It's a $2 decillion, so about 20 billion trillion trillion dollars. So as I said, less, it's more than the entire economy, all the money in the world, basically. It's
because YouTube are restricting, isn't it, their which of their TASS, the national news agencies can broadcast, I believe.
Yeah, so they're basically saying Google has to restore certain YouTube channels that have been restricted. You can guess, probably very critical of Russia, so that's why. It's basically, I think the amount comes from, I think, every infraction, and then basically a certain big sum per day, and that simply adds up to ridiculous amount of money. Yeah. Will Google pay that? Could Google pay that?
Week.
Probably yes, because, I mean, you know, they make all the money.
Right? I was going to say, they could cover that, right? No problem.
It's like, it's like,
a few more ads.
They're like, it got here. Here's my credit card.
Right.
Small lines at the very bottom of that article, Patrice, say, months after the invasion, Google's Russia subsidiary filed for bankruptcy, paused most of its commercial operations after government seized control of its bank accounts.
Yeah, so they already got all the money, right?
Yeah, they've already got all the money.
Yeah, I mean, is this going to make any difference? No. Is Google going to pay that? Also, no. Is anybody going to care? No. Is it a funny headline? Yes.
There's a quote in the middle there. It says, but this eye-watering sum was filled with symbolism.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
That's the thing, isn't it?
No, of course.
We're making a big statement.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. It's both the amount and the fact that they're doing it at all is purely symbolical. Probably not even targeted at the outside world. I don't think any of us, including Google or any government in the world, other than probably the Russian government, even cares. It's probably more an internal thing that they can say, "See here, Google, they're breaking the law and they're not paying their fines and whatever. We should seize all the assets because of this fine," and, you know, all of that.
It's purely a down payment on everything they owe.
Exactly. It's purely a political move. So, but yeah, it's still funny. And it, by the way, the penalties are doubling every week. So next, because it's from this week, next week it will be 40 billion, million,
40 decillion rubles.
Yeah. So
another unpronounceable number that no one cares about. Yes.
Exactly. So, yay. That's the story. There's literally nothing else to it, but I thought it's funny, like that Google can be fined that much. It's just a mind-boggling big number. If you really think about that. It's kind of like the EU saying...
Do we
saying,
have computers that can even count that high?
Probably. I'm guessing some quantum computer can, at least.
Certainly not anything I could go by.
No. Probably.
I think that's at least a double integer, right?
At least.
I mean, not even a 64-bit integer wouldn't be enough.
No.
It's just
madness.
Yeah. So that's, as I said, that's the big story this week that I brought.
I think it's an absolutely fantastic story. Not least of which is because now decillion is part of my lexicon.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably the first time anybody has even thought about or like how big of a number that is. I saw somewhere, I think one of the many articles written about this, they actually put it in the headline and it's long. It's a lot of zeros.
It's 2 followed by 36 zeros.
Yeah. 36. So it's long.
And the 36.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just all kinds of crackers.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of.
I mean,
murders.
Almost as ridiculous as the EU charging up to 10% of someone's global revenue for any infraction. So, yeah. Just saying.
This looks good on the books in Russia. Until 2 years from now, when they still haven't been able to collect, and now they have this massive 20 decillion debt that they can't deal with.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's? I mean, you can ask like what's going to happen with it, because if they ever if Google ever wanted to come back to Russia, there's only two, and like the government would allow it. There's only two ways this can happen. So either they pay the amount, which not going to happen.
Right.
I think, I mean, Google could probably just print it. Or the Russian government will say, I don't know, we made a mistake, or this is wrong, or whatever.
As an act of good faith.
Yeah. That's the one. That's probably how they will put it. So, yeah. We'll see.
That is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's not as, but I mean, if Google were to accept that and put that on their balance sheet, that would also be funny. They could, I think, even they would never be able to make up that amount of debt.
Right. Might take them 3 or 4 years.
I think even I mean, are they a $1 trillion company or something? Even with that, it would take them way too long.
Not even close.
Like $1 trillion a year, still not enough.
No, we would all be long dead before they could pay that off.
Yeah, exactly.
And keep in mind, it's doubling, what, every month
every
you
day.
Said?
Yeah, every week.
Every week. It's doubling every week.
Yeah, so which is also a ridiculous like amount if you think about it.
That's like dealing with a loan shark.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean,
right. I was going to say,
Russia,
it's
right?
Like, yeah. It's like credit card debt.
Yeah.
It's true, yeah. I mean, that's Russia.
Right. Well, yeah. Okay, then speaking of decillions.
Oh, my God.
Decillion sounds like a Star Trek thing. Wasn't there an episode about decillions?
Yes, we have...
Isn't that Battlestar Galactica?
We have successfully entered orbit of
Decillion
Vega
5.
Decillion 3, and we are searching for the missing shuttlecraft.
Wasn't that a race on Battlestar Galactica? Like the robots? Oh, no, that was Cylons, not Decillions. Centurions, maybe. I don't know. Maybe there was another robot race.
The Cylon Decillions?
Decillions, yeah.
That was a special tactical strike force.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, my God.
Okay, speaking of decillions, as Jeff was saying, my story is, you might be surprised, it's a story about semiconductors.
I wouldn't have expected that from you.
I know. It's just not really a thing I pay that much attention to. And the story is about some attributes of the TSMC 2-nanometer process. So you might know that, what is the chip in the new iPhone, A18? And the M4s?
Yeah.
I think are...
Something like that. I think 18.
I think they're all made from the N3 process.
Mm-hmm.
The enhanced version of the N3, N3E, which is nominally a 3-nanometer process. So this is kind of the next one,
next
which
generation.
Is production probably next year.
Mm-hmm.
2-nanometer. And there's a conference every year in January called IEDM.
Not to confuse with IBM.
And I can't, it's like electronic, international electronic device something. I can't remember what it is, but it's where people talk about semiconductor process and usually transistors. So it's a really cool conference. A lot of good stuff there and a lot of good information about what companies are doing, because they sometimes don't check their personnel's paper content very well. Sometimes a lot of stuff gets leaked there by mistake.
Whoops.
But there is a guy, I think it's Gary Yip, who's gonna from TSMC, who's gonna talk. And I'm not sure how this information got out, the details about the SRAM, but you know, when you do a chip, you know, if you have like a an A18 chip. It's got a bunch of logic, you know, the GPUs and CPUs and all the logical stuff that's done. It's got some analog stuff to get in and out of the chip and get to the real world. But it also has a lot of on-chip memory, SRAM, static RAM, which is relatively small compared to DRAM NAND type of flash memory, of course. And so this is for on-chip registers, a super fast RAM that's really close to the GPUs and CPUs. And it's a pretty significant chunk of all these kinds of processors. And because of physics, they haven't been able to scale the basic bit cell of an SRAM for very much for three or four generations. They've only had small improvements, and it's because of physics. But with the change to 2 nanometer, and they have a new kind of transistor in 2 nanometer, which helps logic in terms of performance and density, but it really helps SRAM. So unlike the N3 node or even the N5 node, N2 is going to have an SRAM density boost of about 15 or 20% if the information here is to be believed. So N2 for something like the Apple processor is going to get a lot of benefit on the logic side for the GPUs and CPUs in terms of density, power, performance, all that.
In absolute numbers, it doesn't sound all that different that much, but at that scale, it's still significant. They have the number in here from like a paper apparently that was published. It's like from what was it 0.0175 picometer, I think.
Picometer squared. Well, it's
the new one. The old one was 0.021. So 0.021 to 0.0175.
Right, which is about 15-16% or 17% or somewhere around
something
there.
Like
but
that, yeah.
There is so much that's for every
crazy.
Single
yeah.
For every single bit of SRAM that's on there. And there are megabytes of
So they can SRAM do 38 megabits per millimeter squared now.
Right. So
megabytes.
That really blows your mind. 38 megabits.
Yeah, on a square millimeter. 38 megabytes on a square millimeter. Like, think about that.
Right.
That's not a lot. It's like a little whatever grain of sand, and it's 38 megs, which is more than like big ass hard drives were like a long time ago.
Right. So it was one of the, you know, there's always the long pole in the tent as you're trying to improve stuff. You know, you improve some things and then something else becomes a problem. But SRAM's been a problem for 2 or 3 or even 4 generations. And I'm actually really surprised. I didn't expect that there would be any improvement here. So it will be interesting to see how much of this technology innovation comes through in the performance of, you know, let's say it's an Apple M5 chip. Because Apple's been doing pretty well with, you know, again, 15-20% sort of improvements on power performance and die size.
Yeah.
From M1 all the way through M4, they've really done a pretty good job between them and TSMC. So it'll be interesting to see.
And I'm guessing, I mean, that probably means, I mean, they can either increase the amount of memory that they can pack into the same space, or they can kind of keep it steady, but then it probably needs less power and less space.
That's right. Right. There's sort of a three-dimensional space that you can play around in. You can get more density for the same power or more performance for the same power or lower power for the same performance. You can play around with that.
Yeah. So that will be interesting.
Right. So we've gone from 20 decillion down to 2 nanometers.
Yeah, we're from very, very big to very, very
small.
It's
all on you now.
I know, I feel smart already just by listening to what Tom has to say. So mine's less smart, but interesting nevertheless. Windows 10, as we know, is coming to the end of its long and illustrious life.
RIP Windows 10.
Support Windows 10 ends on 14th of October, and essentially Microsoft won't release any more updates. That's the bar. first time ever Microsoft are going to allow you for $30 a year, join in with the update program that they allow to enterprises. Because that's a bargain, relatively speaking, because enterprises are getting charged $60 a seat to do the same thing.
Wow,
for a single year of extended
updates. That's amazing.
I mean, it does. I mean, it kind of shows you that they're taking seriously the fact that the uptake of 11 isn't quite what they were hoping for, or the transition to 11. For a lot of people, have got a Windows 10 machine. It does everything I need. Why do I need to change it?
Yeah,
kind of thing. But we've got to that. It's that debate of we've got to that point with technology a little bit that I don't need anything else. I can get on the internet. I can do these things. For Joe Public. For Joe Public, a lot of them completely. That doesn't. What do I need more for? My mother-in-law is a great example.
But no, to be honest,
she does everything she needs.
I think that discussion you could have had 40 years ago, because even 40 years ago there were people who were saying, whatever, my Pentium, 40 years, yeah, my, it's not even a Pentium, I think at that point, my 386, it's doing everything I need, so why would I upgrade to the 486, right?
I've got one mega RAM. How could I possibly need more?
Exactly. So
I remember those conversations. Yeah, you know,
we just did the transition from like when Windows XP and Windows 7 kind of phasing out. I mean, there's probably even to this day machines out there that like banks and like airports and whatever that are still running XP.
Banks,
probably.
Hospitals all still running version of XP embedded
or Windows 7 even. So I think this is no different. I mean, that the uptick hasn't been so big because people just don't want to do it.
They don't see the
value. Well, then Windows 11 was pretty clunky when it first got released. It's much better now. They got rid of some of the stupid ideas.
Yeah, but that's always the problem. If they do something like this, then people will just say, it's clunky, and they never even check whether that changed or whatever. It's like,
No.
All right, I have a harebrained hypothesis without reading through this article. What if Microsoft has realized that the demand on the enterprise level for continued and extensive Windows 10 support after next year is going to be much higher than they anticipated? So they're letting the individuals get in on this also, so that they can supplement the cost
enterprise level coverage.
I don't think they're supplementing the cost. I think it's more about, the people are not gonna switch, but we might as well charge something for it, just because we can make more money.
They've basically given up for consumers and enterprise moving to Windows 11. The enterprise already had a solution. Fine, we'll just keep charging you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
the consumers, they're going to get $30 a pop per year that they wouldn't have gotten any money. Otherwise.
I mean, for the enterprise, quite often there's that hidden the cost that Microsoft doesn't always quite sort of realize is that I need to take all of my line of business apps, everything that now works on my Windows 10 builds that I've been creating for the last 10 years, and I have to port them over to Windows 11. And if this is all custom proprietary software for this business, it takes them
a company
good while
that
to
maybe doesn't
and
exist anymore, right?
Right.
Exactly, and particularly.
Well,
they
in any any
to, they want to change their what works. It makes no sense to them. It's something that's going to take them a couple of years. They're going to take them a year or so, which they don't have. You know, which they and so they can buy a couple of years of extended support. They can kind of get where they need to be, and that's just a nice knock on for the rest of us that think, well, Windows 10 does 90% of what I want. Doesn't have recall. Doesn't have AI. Doesn't have adverts. You know, and all those things. I mean, particularly a consumer like me, I can go, yeah, great. I don't have any of the nonsense in it. I still have most of the underlying fundamental stability of that operating system. And that was one of the things that still keeps people on Windows 10. It is incredibly stable. Even if it is now over 20 years old. Or maybe 15 years old, rather.
Customers have a nasty habit of not migrating to new software that does not have clear and demonstrable benefits.
Yeah.
And so part of it is they're happy with Windows 10, but the other part is there's not enough benefit to take all the cost and pain that Ian talked about to move to 11. If there was something fantastical with Windows 11 and it was rock solid, they would pay that price to do the migration because there was some benefit. So, you know, we there's kind of the joke that every other version of Windows sucks. So we had Windows XP, it was great. Windows Vista sucked. We had Windows 7, it was great. Windows 8 sucked. Windows 10 came out, works great. Windows 11, funky.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've learned from the past
like
that...
Trek movies.
Kind of, yeah.
I think they've learned from the past that there's nothing they can do with the, you know, with the stick to get people to move when, you know, by this time, Windows 11, the reputation's not as bad as Windows 8 or Windows Vista. Those were total disasters. Yes. But they screwed up yet another migration.
And now everyone gets to pay for it.
Right. Each of you gets to pay $30 a year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm on Windows 11, but I didn't get on until a year and a half ago, and a lot of the crap, the really dumb stuff was gone by the time I got on it. And there's still some funky things, but it's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. But if I was sitting on Windows 10, based on what I heard about 11, I wouldn't migrate until I got a new computer.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's how most people do it. They buy a new computer, and then it comes with, I mean, unless you work in an enterprise, It just comes with a new version.
I've never migrated a machine of my own to the next version of Windows, only at work.
Yeah.
Crazy. Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's Halloween, and one of my favorite trick-or-treat places is TSO Host. I know, that was a stretch, but
that was really
it's all I got today. So why do I like trick-or-treating at TSO Host? Because they give away the good stuff to us. We're not talking fun size candy bars. There's no
full
fun
size.
And we're talking real candy bars. Well, real metaphorical candy bars. And those candy bars, it's the stuff that we need to be able to actually do what we do. For those of you that don't know, TSO Hosts, they do web hosting and help you buy domain names, and they're taking what they do and giving those resources to us so we can do what we do. So those metaphorical candy bars include the bandwidth we need so we can live stream shows every week, the hosting space we need so there's a place for our website to live, and the server space we need so that there's a place for all of the show files to live. And without their generous support, we wouldn't have the resources we need to do what we do for you every week, which is bring live shows to you a couple times a week. So, yeah, we really appreciate that TSO Host is here helping us. So thank you, TSO Host. And it would be really great if all of you would just hop online and give TSO Hosts a shout out. Man, I had to work on my diction to get that sentence out. Wow. Anyhow, give them some online love. Just thank them on your favorite social media network for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. It's a small ask, but it has a big payoff because it's great for them to know that we do appreciate what they're doing for us. So thank you again to TSO Hosts. Now, the other thing is, because you are part of the BTN family, they decided that all of you deserve a little something out of this as well. So the full-size candy bar they're giving you is a 20% discount when you go and buy your domain names. So grab your domain name that you found this week. I think it's patricialantern.com. And get that in your cart. Add in the code. And then you get 20% off your order. So thank you, TSO Host, for doing that. And speaking of Patrice, you did all this great stuff to modernize our system. And that means that the live stream and the live chat work super slick now. So Patrice, do you mind telling people about that?
I don't mind at all because it's a really cool and very, very simple system. So we are recording this live. So if you're listening to this in your favorite podcast player of choice and you're like, hey, that sounds like a great idea. I would like to see how the sausage is made, like because you also get the pre and the post show, like a little bit extra in between. Between before and after. It's fun, it's cool, and you really want to see that, then all you have to do is head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com when we are recording, which is always, and I say always, with a little asterisk, because sometimes, very rarely, it might be that we have to push a time like a little bit around if like all of us can't do it any other time. So follow us on our social medias. But usually it is 7 p.m. UK time for this very show, the big show. And Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time for this very show. And if time zones change, like, or time zones, if, you know, daylight savings changes happen, like that is happening right now, UK already did it, and the US and some other countries are following very soon, except for those places that don't do it. Then you might have to figure out when that is. And I usually post, as I did also for this show, every time, like when that happens, so that people are warned. So fair warning, next week it goes, for most people at least, back to normal times. Because the rest of the world is doing their daylight savings switch. Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for this show. Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show, if you're into the Apple side of things, and oh boy, do we have stuff to talk about this week. Once you are on live.britishtechnetwork.com, there is also the live chat on the right-hand side. So long, that was a long introduction of that. And if you are not willing, able, or whatever, you just don't want to do that and watch us live, you can still get to the transcript of that live chat. So all the links to the articles that we just talked about, the links to cool things that we have coming up, all of that, you can also find on britishtechnetwork.com/chat. There's a very friendly website that has a calendar, and you click on a date. If that date is a link, then there's a transcript. Usually Thursdays and Fridays are very good bets because that's when the shows happen, as I just mentioned. Other days of the week, probably no transcript because there is no show. And if you click on today's date, for example, which is Halloween, October 31st, 2024, then you would see what we talked about today.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice. And thank you again for putting in all the hard work to get us all modernized.
It wasn't hard.
I know that's what you say, but... for the rest of us, it would have taken us several decillion hours.
probably, yeah.
So, hey, it's now time for cool things. So, who has the first cool thing?
Probably not me, because I have to find it.
That would be Tom, then.
Yeah. Okay. I have one shout out and one cool thing today, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. A quick shout out is for an organization called the Dancing Cat in San Jose, California. It's a place that started off as a place where you could go. It's kind of a coffee shop like place where you go and they have a bunch of cats that you can hang out with and pet if you're needing a cat fix. And they also teamed up with another organization to help get cats adopted. And unfortunately, a person we knew died a couple of weeks ago, and she had two cats. And my wife had to go down to the apartment and negotiate with the coroner to get custody of these two cats. So we've had these two cats at home. We love cats. Unfortunately, I'm sort of allergic to cats, so I can only deal with certain kinds of cats. Anyway, we've had these two cats here for a couple of weeks, and Dancing Cat helped us find a really good permanent home for them. So shout out to Dancing Cats and organizations like them. So that's my shout out. But my real cool thing, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's awesome.
Yes, they're a great place. And if your local in your local area has a similar organization, please support them. But my cool thing is something I found. I think it started on Reddit, but I found it on Tom's Hardware. It's a guy who used a Raspberry Pi to drive a daily Calvin and Hobbes comic strip display. And I love the
Nice.
inventiveness and the idea. And I love Calvin and Hobbes. It was one of my all-time favorite comic strips from the 80s and 90s, I guess. So this article describes, and I guess if you went to Reddit, you get more detail, but the article describes how he took a Raspberry Pi, hooked up an e-ink display, did a bit of programming to get everything to
Just a
work.
little
But
bit.
now he's got a display that every day, and it goes in sequence from, I guess, from the first, from the start, so that, you get Monday's comic on a Monday. And it just cycles through them all. I don't know how he got access to all these comics. I'm not quite sure the article said how he did it. But he basically has this ink display. It's set into a picture frame. It sits on a desk and it displays the cartoon every day. And I just thought, I love what people do with Raspberry Pis and other products like that. And I just love this one.
That's actually super cool. I love it.
Very cool.
Great. Now I have another Raspberry Pi project. Okay, cool. Ian, tell us about your cool thing.
I'll pick a company out that's a UK-based company, so sorry anyone else in the rest of the world. This is the British Day Network, so I don't
Yeah,
mind.
it's totally
They're a
fine.
recycler called Music Magpie. They've been around for years. They offer great deals on trading in phones and other bits of electronics, but there's a particular bit of their service that I want to recommend. I've recommended it before. They do a rental program, which is really great if you want to get recent tech. And they do it for iPhones and they do it for Samsung phones. So whichever side of the great divide you work on, you can get a new handset. You can get it. Basically, what you do is you rent a handset for a fee for around about 12 months. You can pick out the model you prefer, rent it for 12 months, and at the end, you've the choice of handing it back, having to reduce rental and keeping it, or handing it in and getting another and different device. I've done this a couple of times. My last iPhone 14 plus and the one before that, I think I had both of those through this. And it was a really good offer, really good deal, worked very well. My wife does it the same. And I've now, just because I've got sick of the Android, I tried Android, I did it, I've given it a best shot. I'm going to trade that one in once I get the new phone and get everything transferred over. I should trade this one in and get another handset. And I'm going back to an iPhone, and this time a 13 Pro Max, because it seems to have everything I need and nothing I don't. Again, in that logic of, well, what do I need AI for? I don't need AI. What do I need? I don't care about the photo correction. I just want something that does reasonable, does good photos, good battery life. Everyone says, is that what you've got there, Patrice?
That's the
But is that
18.
13 Pro?
No, this is the
Pardon?
latest.
That's the
The
late. Well, I mean,
cameras
the
are really
latest.
good. You should get that. Just saying.
No. It's the
No,
one of
it's
the
fine.
things that I found the least satisfying with this handset was the cameras.
Oh, yeah, that's why.
Compared to my old iPhone,
Because you have the
low
no.
light pitch, low light pictures, everything else was so much better. So
Yeah.
I'm just general photography. One particular irritation with that camera was the whole fisheye lens thing. Anything I did macro tended to end up with a big dog, with a dog with a big nose syndrome. You know that thing where
Oh,
you,
that's
where
funny.
what you see is the
Yeah.
dog's big nose and nothing else, because it kind of squishes and messes with it. And I couldn't get rid of, I faffed with the fact and tried different versions of camera apps, still couldn't fix it. And eventually, I guess, well, the reason I have mobile phones in this kind of format, and I don't stick to a featureless phone, is because I want the internet and I want a camera. It's my camera. So if it's not a good camera, it's losing a particular skill that I need for my phones, which is a camera that I've got with me.
The most
And to
important
be
thing.
honest, the joint dampness of Apple is just too nice compared to everything else I've tried. I'm using at the moment a combination of Google Photos and OneDrive to keep my phone, my pictures in some kind of syncing places. But now I can go back to just using iPhoto and it works. There'd so, be the, that's there'd be cool, the suffering. Though. Pardon?
I was just saying, that's pretty cool, though, because you're able to try out an Android phone.
Yeah.
And you're like, eh, this isn't what I need. But you're not stuck with that phone long term.
I am with this one because I bought it.
But
I didn't pay masses for it, and I suppose that's the advantage. I'll probably lose 50 quid on this when I sell it. I can probably trade it in for about 200, 250 pounds, and I paid about 300. So I look at it as I've lost a couple of months' rentals, effectively, in the cost. So all I need to do is take it into town to the place where I got it from and, one, get them to take off the stuck-on screen protectory thing that's on this, because it's stuck on with glue, and I need to get someone to do that for me. And then I'm going to go to another recycler that's in the high street and trade it in.
Nice.
Very and close. I'll get some money back, which goes against the rentals for next year. And yeah.
Very cool.
All right. Very cool. Our Patricia lantern. You have your link now.
Oh,
so
I have.
Tell us about your cool thing.
So my cool thing is right behind me, and give me a second because it's big and heavy. It's actually not that heavy, but it's big. It's a big box. It's
That's
actually a little
bigger
bit
bigger than I was expecting.
Yeah, me too. It's a black box. So what it is a it's a case. So I think I talked last week about my wanting to replace. I just dropped that again. It's heavy. It's not that heavy, 6 kilos, but I wanted to replace my Mac Mini and kind of get a Linux server, and I wasn't sure, and I decided I'll just order, like, what I've not done in, I don't know, 25, 6 years or something, 20-ish years at least, order a bunch of parts and assemble like a computer myself. I decided to do that again. So I bought this, actually a little bit, I think, oversized. I didn't expect it to be that big. I mean, I could have just looked up the dimensions, but who does that? So it's the Fractal Design Node 804 case. It is impressive. It's not that expensive. It was like, I think it's like $80 or something, or 100. It comes,
right,
I mean,
like for really good gear.
I was impressed how well built it is. So for me, the requirement was I wanted to put in four 3.5-inch hard drives, like spinning thingies, you know, plus maybe one or two SSDs. So that was kind of like those six drives, basically, was kind of the requirement. To say I've overshot a little bit is an understatement. I just, the company, like, there's a retailer in the German speaking countries. I don't know if they're anywhere else in Europe, Alternates they're called. But I've bought from them for like probably also 20 years or so. Like all kinds of stuff, like TVs and washing machines and of course like PC stuff and whatever. They're a really good company, and they like that's what they suggested. Like, hey, like do you want you? I think I said I needed at least four or six hard drives, and they were like, this case sounds good to you. Well, I was a little bit surprised when I got the instruction. One, the box was quite big, and then I got the instruction manual. You can actually put 10 of them in there. Yeah, there's another crazy. Two for 2.5-inch. You can put, I think, 10 Kicks fans in if you want, or water cooling.
My God.
So it comes with 3 case fans, and you can add up to 10. So if you had like a little nuclear reactor in there, not a problem. It is really, so it's really well built. You couldn't see that because I had all the sides on, but you can basically remove the entire, like, basically on one side there's a window. Actually, let me show that again. So there's on this side there's a window.
Oh, yeah.
You can also put it on the other side, so it doesn't matter. It's like, it's basically just a side piece. So it has like two side doors basically, and the top case frame, whatever, you can completely remove, and then you have full access from every angle to the whole thing. So it is really well built. It is not super heavy. It's at 6 kilos. So that's not super heavy for a case. I've had cases, like towers that were massively more like 15, 20 kilos or something. So this is nothing. It's going to fit nicely into my IKEA shelf, where it's a little bit bigger than what I have up there right now, which is a Mac Mini, like an OWC, with two disks, like a RAID enclosure and an extra external hard drive. So it's going to need a little bit more space than that, but not that much more. But it's, I think it's micro ATX size. Mm-hmm. If you know what that means, tell you exactly what it means. Know it's smaller.
It's to do with the form factor.
Yeah, it's the smaller of them. Yes. So, it's, and the rest of the stuff is, of course, coming.
So what are you going to put in it, Patrice?
So I ordered a Core i5. I ordered a ASUS ROG something or another mainboard, a B-Silent power supply. What else did I order? A Samsung, I think 990 Pro, NVMe, and 32 gigs of RAM from, I think, Corsair. I think that's it. So don't nail me on it. I might have forgotten something that I ordered.
So with that motherboard,
nice Windows 11 machine for you?
No, it's not. It's not. It's gonna run. It's gonna be a completely overpowered Linux machine. So there's that.
which version of Linux are you going to put on?
Definitely an Ubuntu. I always run Ubuntu machines. It's going to be an Ubuntu again, because I have all our servers are Ubuntu. For me, the requirement, I think I mentioned that last week. It came down to, I already run a ton of Linux machines, and one more is not going to kill me, and I know how to do that. I can auto deploy everything. It's completely headless. I don't need anything with it, basically. So I'm gonna throw Ubuntu on it, and then that's it. So yeah, it's gonna be, that's probably my weekend project. And of course, because tomorrow is a public holiday, I only get half of the stuff, hopefully, on Saturday. We'll see. It hasn't reached Austria yet, so I hope.
So here's a really dumb question. These days, when you're building your own computer and you get it all put together and you have to load the OS, do you load it from a USB stick?
Yeah, usually USB stick. With Ubuntu especially, you need a couple hundred megs of a basic installer, and then it connects to your network. I mean, I have right next to it is a switch from a Ubiquiti switch. So I can literally just plug it in, and I don't need even need Wi-Fi passwords or anything. Just plug it in, and then it can download everything from the internet. So
yeah, I did that with one recently. Just need the mini installer thing just to get connection, and then it will just stream down the installer. It's fantastic. I've got an Ubuntu box down in there that I'm playing with Docker and things on.
Yeah, and I don't need to install a lot, because most of what I do is basically Docker. So I install a Docker, and that's it. So it's quite simple setup. It's like a bare bones Linux, and then Docker on top, and then everything else, it gets auto deployed from my server, basically. So
that's super cool.
Yeah, that's gonna be the project.
Nice.
Yeah, so as I said,
intense than the Raspberry Pi I was talking about.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the other option was, there's a it's called Minis Forum. There's a ton of mini PCs out there, the Intel, the previously known Intel NUC kind of devices that are now from ASUS, actually. But there's also a whole big ecosystem of mini PCs. They would have been a little bit cheaper, so I think all in, I paid about 1,200 euros for this whole thing, without the two hard drives I already have. But I'm selling basically my Mac Mini and the enclosure, which will pay for that. So it's about the same. So at the end of the day, I get a machine that is more fitting for basically nothing. So that's fine. There's MS-01 that I considered before, and it would have been probably 700-800 euros. So a little bit cheaper, but then I would have still needed the external enclosure and all of that external stuff, and I kind of realized that putting it all in one case is just nicer.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and since I don't have all to put it in the living room or whatever, I don't care. It's my office. It's literally up there, somewhere where all it sits. So that's yeah. very cool. So expect the next couple of weeks. This will be my cool things. Like step by step, I'll probably pick the parts I've bought. I decided to go with a Core i5 instead of an i3. Mostly because it was like $50 more, and I'm like, meh.
Yeah. It's got a little more oomph.
Yeah, I mean, it probably don't need it, but whatever. Made no difference.
All right. Very cool. Okay, so my cool thing is for Windows users. And it's Fantastical Windows. It just came out. I'm a big Fantastical fan. I've been using it since, I think, before it was officially released.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been available for Mac and iPhone and iPad, Apple Vision Pro, Apple Watch. And they've been asked for years, when is the Windows version coming out?
Mm-hmm.
And Fantastical FlexiBits,
yeah,
they write for Apple platforms, but they realize that there's enough interest that mm-hmm. it was time to release a Windows version of Fantastical.
Yeah.
So that's out. It's been out for a couple days, I think, and now you can join in the joy of Fantastical with me.
It's a Fantastical app.
That's kind of nice. That is kind of nice. Yeah. I liked Fantastical whenever I played with it. It is a good tool.
Me too. I used to subscribe to them. I canceled it a little while ago. But...
Where does it store the info? Does it grab it from a service like Google, or does it store
any whatever service you use?
Mm. Yeah. Okay. It's literally just a front end. So it can do Google, iCloud, Exchange, whatever you need. Local, even so, like if you just want that.
Yeah, mine is accessing iCloud and Google, and it just works, and it's easy to use. It's out of the way. Entering events into it is super easy, and it pretty much you just type what you want the event to be. And then it figures it all out and creates the event for you. So
cool.
It's I think it's super cool.
I think they kind of pioneered that whole natural entry thing. I mean, nowadays everybody's doing it, but as far as I know, they were the first, at least on the Mac, the first. Don't know if someone else did it before.
Yeah, I think BusyCal was doing it, but. First, but Fantastical,
that's what I use now.
They came on the scene and did it in a way that was more approachable.
Mm.
Okay, so that's what I'm using right now because it's in setup. So.
If I'm using the calendar app on my iPhone, why should I use this one? What's better?
Because it's better.
It's simply better. It has more. It's the calendar app from Apple is it's okay. It kind of does some things well and doesn't do a lot of other things. You can, for example, connect Zoom or Teams or whatever, if your company allows it, to it, and then it can automatically add, like if you create an entry, you can automatically add like a call to it, for example, stuff like that that Microsoft doesn't, Apple's one doesn't do.
I see.
Yeah, I've been using Dato on Mac. I've been using Dato, which comes again with. It's another one out of the setup suite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I
that does a that does a similar thing. Yeah. Quite nice is actually that data.
My whole problem is that my company doesn't allow it. So I would love to use it, but they they like the last.
I have a similar problem.
Yeah, the my last Windows info I got was, you need an approval from your data privacy officer, from your CISO, and from the board. And I'm like, yeah, forget that.
Never mind.
Never mind. I'm like, nah, thank you.
Well, Tom, I'm looking forward to hearing how you like Fantastical.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna give the Windows version a try.
I went through tons of different programs for managing my calendar over the years, and I won't even go into to the sordid details, but I couldn't find anything that was modern and did the things that I needed it to do without getting in my way. And then Fantastic Owl came along, and that was it. Okay. All right. So it is time to call this show. Our pumpkin chip cookies are done. It's time to wrap this up so we can eat our warm cookies. Mm-hmm. That's a euphemism, or I'm just making it. I don't know. Anyhow, it's always a treat to get to do shows with trick the three or treat. Of you. So trick or treat. So I'm happy we are all here. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me almost every week here on the Big Show on BTN, and also on the Mac Show tomorrow, and almost every Friday. And I say almost because sometimes I'm traveling. You can find out everything I'm doing, all the social media links, the podcast, the projects, literally everything on my website, thepatrice.com. And Jeff and I, and I keep pointing this nice little mug into the camera for the ones listening. This is a Retro Rewatch mug in like orange and black, and it's awesome. Retro Rewatch is our podcast. We're bound to publish a very special episode tomorrow. We just published last Friday the Singularity mid-season cliffhanger that we got like 27 years ago. Something like that. So we're about to publish a special supplemental episode tomorrow. And yeah, Retro Rewatch. That's Jeff and I rewatching awesome, really cool, like TV shows, retro TV shows that Jeff has not seen and I've seen a million times before. In this case, Stargate SG-1. You might have guessed that.
And it is a fun show. I say that not just because I'm on it, but because it's true.
What is that?
The side panel?
That's the top panel. So it's like
so big, but this is big. It's pretty cool.
And it's completely air. Let's the air through and all of it.
The entire top is a vent. That's smart.
The entire top is a vent.
Yeah, nice. Like, nice Nocua Silent fans in there. It'll be all good.
And those are the side panels. Awesome. I'll show the rest after. Let's finish this. Sorry.
Squirrel. All right, Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me handing out decillions of candy bars tonight to all the kids.
Wow.
But also, I am Tom F at sfba.social on Mastodon.
Awesome. Awesome. And I'm all choked up about it. Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Ian Grant. I work for Veeam. Otherwise, you can find me usually in the Slack room arguing with people about Windows and Mac and things, because that's what I've been doing over the last couple of days. There's a fun debate going on. It's the old question of which is better, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. And as we were saying early before in the pre-show, anecdote is not data, sadly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'll leave it there. I'm kind of somewhere floating in the middle.
Use the tool that works best for you.
Exactly.
And on social media, the tool that works best for me right now is Mastodon and a little bit of Instagram, mostly because I have a bunch of automations that I've set up through If This Then That rely on Instagram actually working. Anyhow, the real point is I'm Jay Gamut on all the social medias. And then for shows, Tuesdays, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Thursdays, Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS. Here on the British Tech Network, Big Show on Thursdays, Mac Show on Fridays. Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine. And as Patrice has already pointed out, we do Retro Rewatch. And I am looking forward to our special episode that drops tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So with that, I'm so glad that I got to go trick-or-treating with the three of you today. So thank you for being here with me. And everyone that's watching, listening live, participating in the live chat, thank you to all of you for being here. If you watch or listen to the shows later, thank you for being part of this as well. All of you, every single one of you, you rock. So seriously, thank you for being here. And hey, Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows. And TSO hosts, thank you for being here and supporting us. And hey, don't forget to tune in tomorrow, which will be November 1st, for the Mac show. And then join us again next Thursday for the big show, next Friday for the Mac show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend and safe trick-or-treating.